30 years ago today, the Bosnian War, which killed around 100,000 people, displaced millions and culminated in Europe's deadliest atrocity since World War II, was officially coming to an end. In a hotel conference room on an Air Force base in Dayton, Ohio, the leaders of Bosnia-Herzegovina, Serbia and Croatia initialed an agreement to bring the 3.5-year conflict to a close. 3 weeks later, the General Framework Agreement, known as the Dayton Peace Accords, was signed. Ian Kemish was an Australian diplomat working in Bosnia and Croatia during the war, and Yasmina Joldic was one of the tens of thousands who migrated to Australia following the war. Ian and Yasmina are my guests this morning. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ian, you were in Sarajevo when the Dayton Agreement was struck. What was it like on the ground at that time?
I was really struck by how intent the residents of Sarajevo were on what was taking place across the Atlantic, these negotiations. Wherever you went, cafes, restaurants, hotel foyers, people were gathered around the television sets. People were obviously talking about it, including with me. Their fate was in the hands of these people, and they were very concerned because, of course, they'd been through the horrors of the siege in that city, and those horrors had been reproduced in many other parts of the country. Their lives were at stake.
What exactly did the Dayton Agreement establish?
Look, Dayton, first of all, stopped the war. It stopped the fighting, and that was, you know, an obvious and very important contribution. It essentially froze, though, the military frontiers as they were, and it introduced a constitutional framework which still requires the various factions of that time to work together, or at least their successors to work together. That political settlement remains uneasy, but the big contribution was stopping the war. And of course, it also created some space for the very first UN war crimes tribunal in history, the International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia, to step forward and help bring justice for the victims of war crimes.
Ian, how involved was Australia in the region during the war and afterwards?
Australia really cared about this one in ways that perhaps people might struggle to understand these days. Our commitment to multilateral conflict resolution under Gareth Evans, who was Foreign Minister at the time, was pretty significant. There was deep concern here, as there were, you know, everywhere, about events in Bosnia. You know, it was a time when Bosnia was on the front page of Australian newspapers, and the world had been glued to the horror on television for a couple of years then, in ways that I've been reminded of in recent years with Gaza. But look, you know, we also shaped our humanitarian immigration intake around Bosnia. About half of our intake at the time was from that region, Bosnia, Croatia and elsewhere. And Aussies played a diplomatic role in an individual capacity, supporting UN efforts, the tribunal and so on.
Yes, Manny, you emigrated to Australia as a teenager with your family in the early 2000s. How life-changing was that journey for you and your family?
Oh, absolutely life-changing. I'm listening to Ian, and as you can hear in my voice, I'm still shaking just listening to it. It reminds me of my history, of my family's history, and what we have been through. But when I look at the kind of the depth of human cruelty in the 90s, it instantly reminds me that we've experienced the best of humans here in Australia, and we consider ourselves really lucky to be here.
For those who stayed, what's life been like in the former conflict zone in the past 30 years?
Oh, incredibly difficult. As Ian said, while the Dayton Peace Agreement successfully stopped the war, it really has been criticised for entrenching ethnic divisions and creating often inefficient and complex political system that kind of has hampered national unity and development. It does, the agreement itself remains a foundational yet debated framework for political structure of Bosnia. It shackled us in a way, in ways that that were not ideal. But as Ian said, watching atrocities in Gaza and Ukraine unfold, I kind of started to shift the view of the accord as well. As Bosnians can be quite critical of the accord because it froze us in time. But the kind of the stop-start sputtering of peace in Gaza made me realize that the accord actually worked. And I want to acknowledge that. I really want to acknowledge that my views have changed of the accord. It is an imperfect document, but it stopped the bloodshed and it stopped the killing in Bosnia. That's important. Perspective is really important.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that perspective, Yasmin, not only as someone who's reflecting in a distant sense, but as someone who lived through this. What have been your thoughts as you've watched conflict in Gaza and Ukraine from afar?
Oh, it's a constant reminder how fragile peace is. It is obviously for us who have experienced the war on our own skin. It is incredibly hard watching other humans suffer, and these are not merely chapters of in history. These are deeply personal and painful stories of survival. Human suffering is another level, especially when you have experienced it. So it is incredibly hard to watch it. I remember when Ukraine started to unfold in February 3 years ago, because they have the same color flag as the Bosnian flag, the blue and the yellow, you instantly are transported in time, and you cannot help but reflect on what has happened and what it feels like being on the ground. I was 9 years old when the war in Bosnia started in 1992, and you just don't understand. It's very hard to comprehend what is happening in the middle of Europe, in the center of Europe. So these are painful stories, and they continue to painfully resonate amongst many communities, not just the Bosnian community.
Yeah, Yasmin, even I can hear now in your voice how visceral some of those memories are for you. Ian, I wanted to ask you, as a former diplomat, when you look at the role that Australia played and the way that the Dayton Peace Accords came together as well with US intervention at that time, how do you see efforts at the moment when it comes to Gaza and Ukraine as well?
It's a really interesting question. This was a moment when, you know, spurred by, the international indignation about what was happening, Washington and European capitals came together in a very deliberate, thoughtful but forceful way with the protagonists to close a peace deal. And they did it in a way that's a bit hard to imagine right now in the transactional world of international politics as it stands. It'd be nice to bring back a bit of that spirit, frankly. It also was a time which reminds us, and I think it's important to remind ourselves, that, you know, this was not this was the first, rather, moment in European history that saw conflict after 1945. Ukraine is not actually the first European war since the end of the Second World War. This was a moment which had real meaning for people and real impact on people, and it's important that we remember.
Ian Kemish and Yasmina Joldic, thank you both for being my guests this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ian Kemish is a former Australian diplomat, and Yasmina Joldic migrated to Australia after the Bosnian War, a reflection on 30 years after the Dayton Accords. We were talking, of course, about Ukraine and Gaza there. Very important not to forget also the conflict that continues in Sudan.